Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Current Nerdy Podcast. We're a political, comedic, social, and current events podcast where we give you a nerdy outlook on what's going on in the world today, giving you a look inside the inner conclave of nerdom, and we're here to take over the world in our nerd imperium. So all hail the currently nerdy empire. Can I get a hail? Fuck you guys. We give this podcast to you free every week on currentlynerdy.com and on iTunes, so please feel free to rate, review, subscribe, and share our page and podcast to all your friends, family members, and loved ones. Because remember, you truly don't love someone until you have spread the gospel of Currently Nerdy. Hallelujah. Holla back, little homie. Amen. Can I at least get an amen? No? Nothing? A hallelujah? Our Father? Hail Mary? Come with me. What do we have here now? La da 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 da.
You know, some random church accidentally printed out those lyrics instead of the actual Hail Mary song?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are your hosts of this wonderful, majestic, universal championship winning podcast. My name is Diz. I am your pop culture and sports nerd, which means I can tell you that the Cowboys are going to put Mark Sanchez as their backup quarterback over Tony Romo in week 17 against the Philadelphia Eagles. And they've also clinched home field advantage in the playoffs this year. And I can also tell you that Drake and J-Lo are now a thing. Did you know that? J-Lo. That's really? What we're going to call him. J-Lo.
I've never understood our weird obsession with giving celebrity couples nicknames.
I mean, it just makes it easier. And now to the man who will tell you why, historically, J-Lo's relationships don't work. Ali, take it away.
My name is Ali A. Alomi. I'm the classic nerd of the group, which means that I talk about the various nerdy things that, you know, the rest of you don't. V.
Good evening, friends. This is V-Tran. I cover all the things that Ali and Diz do not.
God damn it. You know I hate when you do that.
But I'm okay with that.
Whatever. How was your Christ's birthday, gentlemen?
It was good.
Yeah? Did you eat a ham?
I didn't eat ham, no.
Is that a thing? Christmas ham?
Yeah, it's we do Christmas hams. The other countries do Christmas turkeys.
Or goose. A fat goose.
We do hams, really.
Why is it that we do hams? Is there like a
Because we do turkeys for Thanksgiving.
Ah. Did you get anything cool for Thanksgiving? For Christmas?
Yeah. I mean, We had a Santa, we had a gift exchange with my family.
Oh, I saw your fucking picture. You put it on the Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a white elephant gift, actually. Yeah.
It was just a picture of yourself?
It was a picture of me, and I signed it, and it says, congratulations for being related to me.
Yeah. You do that with your family?
Yeah.
Did that gift get stolen?
It did get stolen once, actually, yeah.
For real?
Yeah. Ah. I hit a Target gift card inside of the frame.
Stolen so you could throw it in the trash.
What? I would... That's just, why would you throw that in the trash? If V got me a signed picture of himself,
I'd throw it in the trash.
I would put it on my desk.
I see him every day. What the fuck would I want a framed picture of him for?
That's true. And I made it a point to wear the same outfit that I was wearing in the picture.
That's pretty dope.
And I also, so if you see the picture of me on Instagram, you can find me on VTran214. That's VYTRAN214 on Instagram or Twitter. So there's a picture of me kind of looking up with like, you know, the thinker pose, right? And when I saw that they had taken my gift and they were unwrapping it, I like quickly like moved into that same pose and just stood there frozen. So like when I heard everyone start laughing, they looked over at me. I was in the exact same pose. Yeah.
This is why people think you're weird.
I'm okay with that.
I like that. I would have stolen that gift.
My family is naturally, we're all like my cousins are, we're all kind of irreverent in that way. Mm. Like one year my cousin... he bought a snowboard for himself and he wrapped it and he put a card on there and it said, it actually said from mom on there. So he acted the whole night like his mom got it for him to see how she would react.
Did she claim the gift?
And she was like, when he's all like, oh, thanks, mom, I appreciate it. And she just kind of looked at him and smiled and went, you're welcome.
So she claimed it.
And then this year, a different cousin for the exchange. Yeah, we got our other cousin Stephanie's fiance, and he bought him an IKEA gift card, but he put it in an Olaf pinata from Frozen, and he'd filled the pinata with like extra size women's panties.
So like, you're not the weird one in the family. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and it was like, it was Heron was the guy's name, and he didn't like, there's like a string at the bottom. You can open it and then all the stuff falls out.
His name's Heron. Is he like,
he's
Indian?
Sri Lankan.
Yeah. His name's Harun.
Yeah. And so he pulled the bottom and like a bunch of Snickers fell out, and then all the panties kind of, and then in between he had to paw through them, and there was an IKEA gift card in the middle.
Was that for
his... Does he like IKEA?
Well, he asked for it on his list because they're getting married later this year. So it's one of those things for their new place.
IKEA's a weird place.
It is a weird place. It has weird names like Smorgasbord, and it's for like a bookcase.
Yeah. It's got weird Flugan names for things.
Flugans are like a light or some shit.
People go there to eat.
It's true. They have Swedish meatballs and like hot dogs and stuff.
I don't go there to eat. Any place that...
serves furniture and food.
Yeah, it's not a place that I go to eat. I just came across a place recently. I took a picture of it. I was thinking of sending it out. I was very curious. It said Thai massage, Thai food, and an aquarium.
Wait, what?
All in one.
Well, it could be the Thai massage aquarium where they have the fish eat the calluses off.
No, that's not what it is.
Oh.
It is three separate things. It's by LAX.
Oh, no, it's not. They're not all the same. It's just they're next door to each other.
They're not. It's the same building.
Are you sure?
I made sure.
Oh, you checked in?
I didn't check in.
Did they give you a happy ending?
I looked inside the building and there's literally, it's one building.
The fuck?
It's not like multiple stories or there's different sizes.
Look, I understand the appeal. You go in there, you
get
your happy
ending
massage.
No, what I'm trying to understand is like, this type of business is a millennial business, right? It's like that guy that can't decide what he wants to be. Could either become a masseuse, a restaurateur, or I'm really into tropical fish.
No, dude, listen. Here's the reasoning behind it, all right? These businessmen come with, like, their children and families and stuff. So what they do is they go and get their little happy ending massage, send their children and families to the aquarium, and they all meet up and eat some Thai food.
That's stupid.
Bro, logic.
I wouldn't do all of that in one building. The question is, like, there's got to be some form of regulations.
Yeah, you would think, right?
You would think there's something like this. Like, if you're massaging people, you can't also give them food.
Yeah, and then there have rules them go through your...
I mean, can you eat at spas?
Yeah, but usually most spas that have food, what they do is they have a deal with, like, a restaurant, and the restaurant delivers the food,
don't,
and then
they don't. They're not aquariums.
Yeah, no. They're not aquariums. Like, it's one of those things where it's a little bit... a lot of Thai food isn't necessarily seafood. You know, they have plenty... They eat plenty of chicken and pork. They don't really eat cow in Thai food.
You don't know what I'm talking about this building in LAX, have you?
I know what you're talking about.
You've seen it, right?
I've seen it, yeah. I thought it was separate.
They looked the same to me. I was going to send a picture to y'all. I was like, someone explain this.
Yeah, I thought it was separate. And I just explained it to you. And I used sound logic, and you don't want to take my logic.
It doesn't look logical to me.
It sounds logical.
Also, because the writing, the font for Thai massage and Thai restaurant
are different.
It's the same font.
It is the same font.
It is the same
font. It's like that big old bold.
So maybe they're owned by the same company.
Maybe. Possibly.
The same group of people.
Same person.
And
same.
The aquarium is just like... their cousin Albert,
right?
Who likes to sell fish.
There is a little bit of a, you know, you think about it, because there's a place near us, there's an El Pollo Loco off El Toro Road.
Uh-huh.
It's right next door to Omar's Exotic Birds.
Yeah.
And you think about it, and you're like, I'm not a fan of this, right?
Yeah, but Omar's has always been there.
Yeah.
I think Omar's was there when Orange County was founded.
Yeah.
It's like Omar was the only Middle Eastern person that moved into Orange County.
He sold exotic birds.
He was actually a caravan dealer. He came with the gold rush. It's the only Middle Eastern guy that came with the gold rush
in the 1840s.
And he set up shop.
Somehow he was able to dominate the burgeoning exotic bird market in Orange County.
That was the trade he was in. When he came over during the gold rush, he was selling things like toucans and shit. Flamingos.
Yeah, right.
And they were like, this man with this turban and his robes. Selling like, toucans.
Looks like the Lawrence of Arabia.
My brother, come.
Please, I have the nice parrot for you.
This bird comes from China.
This one will sing for you. This one will talk whatever you
say. And white people were just like amazed.
I like you, Omar. You're one of the good ones.
Yeah. He was the Saracen.
Right? He's the Saracen. He's using Crusader terms.
Yeah, the Mahmadians. Omar the Mahmadian. He showed up in the 1800s with his burgeoning exotic bird trade.
Ah, man.
He's been in El Toro ever since.
Yeah, only people from Orange County will understand. Like,
no
this
one
joke.
Knows what we're talking about. Omar's exotic birds. This random store.
It is a really random store.
It has just nothing to do with the plaza.
Yeah.
And there's think about it.
There's really nowhere else around there. Like, when you think about buying exotic birds, they're like, is there really any other place in Orange County?
There's no other place.
It's called Omar's Exotic Birds.
There's no other place that talks about
it. And then there's like the pool hall next to it.
There's Big Shots Billiards.
Yeah.
But then there's a sushi bar that's attached to it.
The billiards?
No, to Omar's Exotic Birds.
Oh.
Right? Because I remember them.
It's the same building, not the same.
Yeah, they ended up on a fail block because they had a giant sign that said that they were supposed to say all you can eat sushi, but apparently. The owners, I guess they had the person who made the sign spell it out phonetically, so it said all you can eat sushi, IT, for a while until they fished it like a year ago. Yeah, nice. But for the longest time along the road when you drove by, this big old sign said all you can eat sushi.
Of all the restaurants to be connected with Omar's Exotic Birds, I think it's very fitting that all you can eat sushi.
Yeah. All you can eat sushi.
And then also there was just that El Pollo Loco that was nearby that's off-putting.
But let's be just real. Do you know anyone that's bought anything from Omar's Exotic Birds?
Honestly, I don't even remember ever being... No matter what time of day, it always seems like it's closed when I go in there.
It's like, I don't think it's ever done business, but they have all that money that they got from the gold rush. Right? Yeah, stay in business for years.
It's a fucking front, dude. It's a front for ISIS.
See, like, now, line crossed. Line crossed. Yes,
your habitual line crosser.
Yeah, like, it was perfectly fine until you went there.
You had to bring ISIS into this?
Yeah, no, like, what? Poor Omar. Omar didn't even know what ISIS was. He's from the 1800s.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's before ISIS is a thing. Yeah,
like, it's a front for the Crusades.
Poor guy.
It's like, and his poor kid who's run the shop now, like Omar the third or whatever. You know, it's like
Junior.
He's trying to sell his exotic birds to these people in Lake Forest or whatever.
His deep passion for exotic birds.
Wait, now what if this Omar is a Mexican Omar?
Possibly.
Yeah. And you guys are just being racist and
assimilation. Maybe he originally was. I thought you meant like eventually went to a Mexican and <No. laughs> like it was passed down many generations.
No, asshole. Like legit. There's
one of them was really into a Latina. Yeah.
No. There's actual Mexican Omars. I know a few Mexican Omars.
Could totally well be it.
That would make more sense.
I doubt it. I mean, the historical research that I've done in this indicates to me that this was.
What if he decided when he finally sells the shop, though, he can only sell it to someone named Omar, like refuses to like get rid of the name?
Well, yeah, you can't really have Habib owning Omar's Exotic Bird.
Yeah, right?
John.
Yeah, that'd be
it's
fucked
like,
up.
Hey, John, what do you do for a living? Why I own Omar's Exotic Birds?
Wait, what?
But your name is John.
Yes, but Omar.
Omar founded it.
Yeah.
And we would decide John's Exotic Birds just doesn't
sound as good.
What if it was actually founded by a John?
Yeah. He just named
himself. He's like, John's Exotic Birds doesn't sound right. I need a persona. So John created the character of Omar.
Oh god.
This turban wearing exotic bird salesman.
How the hell did we get into Omar's Exotic Birds?
I don't know, but I have my imagination is running wild.
you're just enjoying this way too much.
No, because I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm gonna think about it all night. I'm gonna go to sleep thinking about Omar's Exotic Birds.
You know, it is like
I might write a novel.
It's kind of a
a short story on Omar's Exotic Birds.
Ali opens up the Wikipedia page for Omar's Exotic Birds.
If I knew how to use Wikipedia, I would totally change the page and rewrite its history.
Oh, God.
Oh, poor Omar's Exotic Birds. We've ruined their reputation. Or maybe we bring the only business they've ever had.
Dude, we should charge him for this.
We should charge him. This is a free promo.
Yeah, fuck you, Omar. Pay me. Although I did ask, it's
that line step again.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah.
What I said? Fuck you, pay me. That's wrong.
And you also called him ISIS at the same time.
That's what I'm saying.
Actually, I'm pretty sure the damage you've done is irreparable. There's nothing you can do about
it. So maybe don't pay me, but don't sue me at the same time.
Don't sue him, please. Omar, for anyone who's listening, Omar's Exotic Birds has no connections whatsoever to ISIS.
That's true.
That we're aware of.
See? Like, just unnecessary. It's wrong.
It's in a different way. We don't know. We're assuming it doesn't.
For all non-Orange County listeners are sitting there going, what the fuck are these three people talking about? Please go to Omar's Exotic Bird. Google it off of El Toro Road.
El Toro Road.
Lake Forest, California.
And you'll know exactly what we're talking about. Because you need to visualize the place, even the writing of it.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's something.
It's fucking kind of still hard to laugh, though, man. And I'm still reeling, bro. Fucking 2016, bro.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
This is literally just
don't,
shit.
I mean, let's not be mean to the year because there's still a couple days left and it may decide to exact its vengeance.
Well, it depends. It depends on when this iTunes decided to release this episode because we might.
Yeah, seriously.
It might release.
In the new year.
Yeah.
In the new year. But, dude, it's brutal. Like, how many of our fucking childhood fucking heroes are dying?
Yeah.
Snape was like your childhood hero.
There's a great meme right now that goes going around, the prince and the princess.
Yeah.
Snape's, yeah.
Yeah. And then
Bowie.
Yeah, they said Bowie somehow found a way to create like his own separate universe and now he's just taking people one by one.
He's like join Ziggy Stardust the people.
He's Ziggy Stardust the people.
We should mention who passed away.
The princess, Leia Organa.
Yes.
Also known as Carrie Fisher.
She passed away. She had a heart attack on an airplane.
Yeah, on the way back from France?
On the way back from England.
England.
Yeah. Sad because we had a scare a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And then everything was fine. Like, 2016, being the person that it is, you know, gave us the dangled the carrot. And then
She was in stable condition after she had a heart attack. So it's like, okay, she's fine. And then she died.
Yeah.
Then her mother, Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie Reynolds, dude.
Had a stroke while preparing for her daughter's funeral.
Yeah.
And then today or Wednesday she passed away.
Yeah, the day after.
The day after.
Yeah, she had a stroke the day after and died like 2 days after.
Yeah. So it's a difficult year for the Fisher Reynolds family.
Yeah.
It's really sad. A nerd icon has really...
Yeah, Carrie Fisher.
I wanted to also quote, I don't know how true this is, but from what I understand, she actually wanted this said... she was found dead, drowned in silver moonlight, and strangled by her own brassiere.
Yeah, that comes from a story she tells about she wore the white robe or gown that she's famous for Princess Leia. And George looked at her and goes, "You can't wear a bra with that."
Uh-huh.
And she says, "Why?" And he's like, "Well, no one wears bras in space."
Yeah.
Matter of factly. No one was like, "Why is that?" Well, you know, your body expands in space, and your bra doesn't, so you'd be strangled to death. So that's where that quote, bathed in moonlight, drowned, strangled by her brassiere, that comes from the fact that George Lucas decided she wasn't going to wear bras in space. He just randomly decided that.
She really was quite beautiful.
Yeah, she was a fantastic actress, a pretty staunch ally for mental health issues.
Yeah.
Addiction.
She had her demons.
Her autobiography is considered one of the funniest, tragic, and greatest autobiographies ever written. So if anyone's ever interested, go and read it. It's very, very interesting. She talks about like electroshock therapy and all sorts of things.
Yeah. Oh, really? It's pretty crazy, actually. Yeah. Like the kind of the turbulent life that she lived.
Yeah.
But now it's like in the more modern era, you know, she was, a pretty big activist for a lot of things. And there's actually a tweet that was really powerful, in my opinion, that she tweeted a while ago, talking about ageism, right?
And
she made this great tweet: "Men don't age better than women; they're just allowed to age."
Yeah,
you know. And you think about how important a quote like that really is, and in terms of kind of criticizing the way that we look at men and women when it comes to
when we watched Force Awakens, right?
Yeah,
no one remarked Harrison Ford had aged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess
You could argue he aged in front of us, right? Where she was kind of went behind the scenes. But the reality is that most people look at Harrison Ford and go, "Oh, God, he's so old now." Or, "Oh, man, he's so aged so horribly." They go, "Oh, he's got character lines or whatnot." Whereas when women age, they go, "Oh, she's unrecognizable. She's aged so much." And this is something that Carrie Fisher had to face because she was reprising her role as Princess Organa, right?
General
Organa. General
Organa.
She'll always be known as Princess to me.
Yeah. So it's really tragic. And it just 2016 has been tough when it comes to celebrity deaths. Not just celebrity deaths.
George Michael died last week.
George Michael died within... and then
he died on Christmas.
A week. Yeah.
It was his last Christmas.
Yeah. It was bad. But we have a few days left, so we shouldn't...
Yeah.
We shouldn't fuck with 2006. I mentioned it's like 2016 didn't want to go out without a bang.
I swear, dude.
It's like it wasn't gonna whimper off into 2017. It's like if I'm going to end, I'm going to end by killing everyone.
Right? Yeah, the fucking world ends New Year's Eve. Like you're all done.
2016 is reminding us that just in case, like you forgot how shitty of a year it was. In case you forgot that Snape had died, you know, Alan Rickman had died, Bowie. David Bowie had died. It's like, it's okay. I'll remind you. Yeah, I'll remind you.
You fucking prick 2016. You're the worst.
It's tough. But I think for people like us on the podcast, people like Alan Rickman and Carrie Fisher, they hold a very special place, right? We're not, I mean, I know I'm not particularly celebrity inclined. I don't get dazed by celebrities or starstruck. I'm not interested in, but it's hard not to recognize their accomplishments, particularly because they're part of a world that we really love, mm-hmm. right? And that is the nerd world. Whether it's your Harry Potter people, whether you're Star Wars people, whether you're whatever you are, right? They're part of those fandoms creating universe. I mean, and Princess Leia, the character, is really iconic. She breaks the mold of what it meant to be a princess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about, really, at the end of the day, it kind of sucks because a lot of the times, and what we were talking about with The Force Awakens, it's like Carrie Fisher to people about aging and all that stuff. It's like people remember her in the bra at Jabba the Hutt's palace.
Yeah. But
they don't always remember her as being Princess Leia Organa, the one who sacrificed herself to let the plans go in A New Hope, right? Mm-hmm. She stayed there and she had sent the R2 unit.
Also wields a blaster.
Exactly. Goes into Jabba's lair to try to save Han, right? That's some powerful stuff. And it's just like, and the whole time, like Han's talking about Princess this, Rich that. And the whole time she's proving that she's more than just Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan, that she is a warrior and a leader and someone who can actually lead the rebels to victory.
And during this particular time period, sci-fi was a predominantly male-dominated genre, right? It's one of those genres that, for the longest time, it was men, right? And there was also this idea that only men were into sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
And same thing with fantasy. Fantasy always been pretty male-dominated.
Yeah.
But the character of Princess Leia broke that mold. She was, in the sci-fi genre, not as a typical female figure, which is often passive and more of an object than anything else, either the damsel in distress, right? The motif of saving the princess is not a new one.
No.
Right? There's always, I mean, this is what makes Star Wars blend so easily with fantasy, is that there's this idea of the rogue off going to save the princess.
Yeah.
Locked away in a tower somewhere. But imagine walking into that tower and finding that she's just as willing to pick up the weapon and fight alongside you, right? And that's what made Princess Leia so iconic as a figure, right? She wasn't just Han's love interest. She was a commander and a leader. And probably one of the most significant, you know, elements of that is that she wasn't, they didn't treat her as kind of unique. Because you have warrior women, right? Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah,
Red Sonja.
Has Red Sonja. But there's this idea that Red Sonja is kind of bizarre.
She's
different.
She's not like the other women.
Right.
Yeah.
Where Princess Leia, there's something about her when she's, you see this most, I think, evidently when they're on Hoth, right? The snow planet.
Yeah.
As she's evacuating people and giving commands in the command center, no one is treating it unusual that they're receiving commands from a woman.
Yeah.
And that's really indicative of kind of what Princess Leia represented.
Absolutely.
Right? Not that she was unique as a woman, but she really represented that women had a place in sci-fi that was not contested. Right. It wasn't like, I won't be taking orders from some princess.
Yeah, it was just something you don't see every day.
Right. So I think this was, her contributions to the nerd world won't go unnoticed. She'll be remembered and loved, but also the fact that she did so much outside of that, beyond being an actress or an actor, her work in activism and mental health.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you want to really like have Carrie Fisher's legacy go on, then we need to be more involved in like not putting a stigma with mental health and like normalizing it, you know, like.
I think if there was one way to sum it up, it would be what John Oliver does. It's hashtag fuck 2016.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Fuck. So this year needs to be over. Seriously, I was talking to you about this the other day. Like, personally, I've had actually a pretty decent year.
Yeah,
it's been too. A really great year for me. I was successful. Better. 2016 was better for me than 2015 was.
That's true.
I accomplished more. I did more. Everything, like every marker in my life that I used to measure success, 2016 was great.
Yeah.
But I'm so ready for the year to be done.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had a year where I personally did well, but still felt down in the dumps because the year as a whole was like dark and gloomy and evil and involved the killing of Harambe and the loss of celebrities and the destruction of the Republic. Literally elected Emperor Palpatine.
God.
It's just a less smart version.
More sensitive one, too.
Really sensitive. Yeah. Some butthurt because someone says something about him.
I know. Send the TIE fighters against Iran.
He's been more, you know, offended by Hamilton than he's been by, like, dictatorships abroad. So we are, 2016 is the year where we go, what the fuck? This year sucks.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on?
So ready for 2017, and that's probably going to be just as bad.
I don't know, man. How much more of our fucking childhood could 2017 ruin?
But was our childhood the way we really remembered it?
I don't know.
I mean, we always have a tendency to look back on the past with some element of nostalgia and optimism and hope, because the present is always filled with cynicism.
You're telling me a Gushers and fruit roll-up sandwich isn't the greatest invention?
No, I'm telling you right now that if you think back on, like, your childhood and the things you think were great, there's a lot more fucked up things going on there. Perfect example of it is Gushers. What the fuck was that thing?
Amazing.
It was the worst thing in the world.
Couldn't refrigerate it. There was no refrigeration. There was a weird juice in the middle.
And did you ever notice that, like,
amazing
Gushers always, like, whenever you open the package up, it seemed like you had opened up an expired package or something.
Yeah, it was all either stuck together or squashed.
Right. It was always stuck together.
We actually talked about this a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
It's like there was never, but like we think back, we're like, oh man, Gushers. No. You could never tell the flavors either. It was all just vaguely sweet. Yeah.
Who cares?
And syrupy and sticky.
My parents never bought Gushers, so I didn't really, all my friends would have them though. So I usually take one from somebody.
Yeah, I hated that shit. Or the stories we grew up with as children. Take Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah,
I went on a rant, by the way, the other day, a few days ago, of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. In light of this, right? So Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer story is pretty standard, right? He's a reindeer among Santa's reindeer that's born, and he's born slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
What's different about him? He's got a red fucking nose.
It blinks, no?
Right? He's a red-nosed reindeer.
It glows.
What the fuck? It's a red-nosed reindeer. That's weird. So what do all the reindeer do, you know, because they're all...
They bully them.
They bully them. Because that's what reindeer do. They bully people with red noses.
What?
You fucking red-nosed piece of shit.
That's what I say.
Piece of disgusting deviant filth.
Wait, seriously? That wasn't directed towards fucking Rudolph. Looked at me and said that.
I'm pretty sure that was directed at Rudolph the Red-Nosed.
Sure, the
jokes Dasher about, said it.
Yeah,
Dasher
all sorts it. Of jokes about tossing Santa's salad because he had a red nose.
And he put shit in a bag and left it on his doorstep.
Yeah, lit it on fire.
This is the stuff they did. And then comes that one foggy night, right? It's so foggy, Santa's fat ass doesn't have
apparently doesn't headlights. Have headlights. Yeah.
All of a sudden,
God, you're really pissed about this.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, his nose, like, it's glowing. It's like, oh, he can lead Santa's sleigh tonight.
Ooh,
right. That was the phrase, right? He can lead Santa, and so all of a sudden, Rudolph, the kid that everyone bullied, becomes the hero. And we told this story over and over. It's a rhyme. It's a song.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed
Reindeer. Yeah, yeah. The point of the moral is what? That, you know, you'll find your place.
Mm-hmm.
That the thing that makes you different will make you special one day.
Yeah, it's a good story.
The thing that will, or you shouldn't, like you could argue, you shouldn't bully people because someday you may need them.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are really good morals. But if you think back on, like, the actual story, it's a fucking exploitative story. It's capitalism at its finest, right? Capitalism wants what? Good factory workers. All the reindeer must be the same. The same antler size, the same black nose. They all are yoked to the sleigh. The sleigh is the factory. The bourgeois Santa Claus.
And Mrs. Claus. Look,
he's wearing fur-trimmed suit. He's a fat fuck. If that doesn't say bourgeoisie, yeah. I don't know what
does. It's a Wall Street fat cat, if I've heard one.
He is literally the bourgeoisie, right? And he wants conformity. His sleigh is ruled with the whip of capitalism. Right?
What is wrong with you?
And then you have Rudolph, who's a deviant. And deviants must be punished. His nose is red. He's unacceptable in the factory because good workers aren't deviants, right? Good workers are moles. It's why we're taught, raise your hand when you want to speak. You know, don't speak out of turn. When the bell rings, you're dismissed. When you have 10 minutes.
That's not true.
That's the whole book.
My teachers used to say the bell doesn't dismiss you.
But the point is still what? Control, right?
It never stop you from getting ready to leave, though, when the bell rings.
Or you have to be in class when the bell rings, right? So it's all the factory. Rudolph broke the rules by being born different. And he wasn't acceptable until fucking Santa Claus decided that he could exploit his deviance. Mm. He's like, your red nose makes you different. That one night, that difference was needed. All of a sudden, he's like, Rudolph, I need you to lead my sleigh. That the moral of the story isn't the thing that makes you different will one day make you special. The moral of the story is that capitalism will fuck you no matter what. That's the moral of the story.
So you think about, you know, if YouTuber Vine existed at the time, Rudolph would have made a killing off of his own vlogs. But,
you know, you start off with something creative like a vlog and it ends up becoming exploited by, you know, Nike or some shit.
Yeah, next thing you know, Rudolph is being sponsored by YouTube.
You know?
Hashtag childhood
ruined. In between every jump screen, he's crying to himself.
Absolutely. You know, as much as I want to disagree with Lee O'Lennon's, you know, theory here about Rudolph Red Nose, I understand where you're going with this.
It's true.
Because
what you remember as a child is actually more fucked up than it
because,
was.
Because, you know, actually, it brings up the Ugly Duckling story. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Ugly Duckling, and it actually kind of fits more into it, right? Because in this situation, the Ugly Duckling is being persecuted by his own family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he moves on to, like, an old woman's house where the cat and the hen end up persecuting him even more. He goes and hangs out with the wild geese, right? But the geese get slaughtered by a hunter. So this poor thing is just getting screwed left. He's the Starks of the animal kingdom, right? Getting fucked over no matter what. You know, families hate him. Probably fucking his sister. No, that's not a Stark. That's a Lannister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Families.
What happens is he literally goes to the winter by himself. And his own solitude, he decides that he's going to kill himself. Right, by running into the flock of geese that are flying by. He figured that if he's going to die, he might as well die getting killed by these beautiful geese. So he goes up there to the group of geese, right, and they end up stopping and they end up accepting him. Because it turns out this whole time he transformed into a beautiful goose. You know?
Because he goes from an ugly duckling to a beautiful goose. The story of this is that fundamentally the ugly duckling is not accepted, the beautiful goose is accepted.
Yeah, and the idea being that it's the process of changing oneself will eventually get you accepted, right? It's about the personal journeys,
and
right?
And beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, and the problem with this, though, is the messed up part is that, you know, I mean, those geese that were mean to him are still the jerks that they were before. It just so happens that now he had changed, right? So it's, at the end of the day, you know, it's a pretty fucked up ideal to be holding.
It is a fucked up idea, because this is what the moral of the story is like.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right if you grow up to be big and beautiful, then everything's okay.
Yeah.
Right? It's okay if you're beautiful. But what happens if you're not beautiful? What if you remain the ugly duckling?
Yeah.
It was his life just screwed. The same thing I often talk to Harry.
He was on the verge of trying to kill himself.
Harry Potter fangirls, right? They're all like, I love Draco Malfoy. I'm like, if Draco Malfoy was an ugly, if he wasn't played by Tom Felton and he was played by like some ugly kid, would you say you love Draco Malfoy? Yeah. They're willing to forgive the fact that the dude is technically a white supremacist.
Yeah.
Right? He's a white supremacist. He's a wizard supremacist.
That's true.
But because he's good looking, he's like, no, he's tortured. The same thing, right? If you're good looking enough, it's okay if you were an ugly duckling at one point.
Yeah.
As how long many, as you grew up to become a beautiful
how
geese.
Many people love Neville Longbottom now that he's grown up?
They don't, like, what if Neville Longbottom never changed? They would be like, oh, we still love him. that like awkwardness because he's all of a sudden now he's a hunk.
Yeah, they would have friend zoned him even if he didn't try to get with them.
I like that you brought up ducks and the ugly duckling.
Because you were a duck at one point?
No, fuck that.
Never. I love ducks.
I was a handsome beast. The Mighty Ducks.
Always ugly.
Fuck you. The Mighty Ducks. Those kids, right? They're little poor kids from the inner cities and shit.
Feel good movie.
Right? Minnesota.
Emilio Estevez.
Right? Yeah. Emilio Estevez was
who happens to be the brother of
Charlie Sheen.
Yes. Little known fact.
Yeah. Son of Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen. Yeah.
Who got killed in The Departed.
Who's quitting. Who's. Oh, that's not Martin Sheen. That's a different Sheen. Michael Sheen is quitting
acting. That's Michael Douglas.
No, the other one. Michael Sheen.
Who's Michael Sheen?
The guy who plays Arrow in Twilight.
I don't know who that is.
He plays Lucian in Underworld.
Never
watched it. Oh, okay. The Lycan.
Yeah, he's a guy who he's like in a bunch of movies. He always plays vampires or wolves.
Yeah, he was also in Tron Legacy. He was like that weird cafe guy.
Also, didn't watch that.
Jesus Christ, like every reference we've given, he's like,
pop culture nerd over
here. Yeah, I know, seriously. Michael Sheen.
Okay, I'll Google
it. Like, he's known for his like teeth. He's a brilliant, he's kind of like a...
Oh, white dude, big teeth?
No, well, that's dude. He's a British guy, he's quite known.
Was he part of the Volturi?
He's part of the Volturi, yeah.
Yeah.
He's well known, he has a Gary Oldman type personality in that he's able to kind of really conjure unique characters. Mm. But he's quitting acting and he's going to become an activist in Britain.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
just but random fact.
So... Mighty Ducks, all right?
Estevez.
Yeah. These kids from the inner city, all right? Everyone thought they were losers. They were nobodies. And this fucking drunk guy had to, like, go...
Rich drunk
lawyer dude had to go help him because Mr. Ducksworth said he had to.
Yeah.
All right? And then they got good out of nowhere, right? Then they found that big dude, one of the Bash brothers. They grabbed him. And then they grabbed the little figure skater twins.
Mm.
And, like, and they also make the cake eater play on their team. These kids were nobodies. No one gave a shit about them.
Cake eater is an insult.
Yeah, it is.
Sounds like an insult.
Yeah, they called him cake eater because he was the rich kid.
Yeah.
Cake eater, right? Like French.
Is that a Marie Antoinette thing?
Mm. Yeah. Think about it. I didn't know that. So when I was a kid, I found that out in history. Like, oh, no wonder why they called him a cake eater. Stupid. Anyways, yeah, Mr. Banks. That was his name too. Banks is the rich kid. Go figure.
Mm.
But they were shit. No one cared about them, right? They didn't have anywhere really to practice. They didn't have gear. Like, their team sucked. All the other teams were getting, like, sponsored and shit. They didn't even have jerseys. Like, you know? Like, and then finally he had to convince Mr. Ducksworth to give them jerseys because they were starting to do better. And then finally, when they do good, they're accepted by people. Like, when I was a kid, I just thought it was a bunch of kids that, like, hey, this guy, he needed to redeem himself, so he's going to help these kids because he was a hockey player too. And I was like, hey, maybe one day I'll get a football coach that'll make me really good at football. But no. It's about, like, these kids are nothing.
I was remembering how ugly he was as a kid. I made a face, and both V and is looking at me because I was making a weird face. I was remembering how ugly he was as a child.
But no, like, I didn't think about it at the time, but now I'm thinking, like... Unless, like, you're really, really good at something.
Right.
No one gives a shit.
It's actually the moral of that movie's kind of fucked up. Right. At the end of the day, you look back on those feel-good movies. Like, The Mighty Ducks is meant to be a feel-good movie. We watch it every once in a while.
We quack, quack, and shit.
Yeah, you quack, quack. Flying quack, quack, Mr. Ducksworth, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you go, oh, or, like, the rich the guy, he's like, you know, he really starts to believe in them,
mm-hmm.
right? But all along the way, there's all sorts of... It's not just that the movie has a really twisted moral. It's that morals come with a set of social assumptions,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like those assumptions that you need to question, right? Those are the things you really need to question. So like the assumption here is that like once they're a good team, they are now worth something. Wait, when they're poor and not a good team, they're not worth something.
No.
Or like the shooter guy, the one that's really good with the... He does the puck shot thing.
Yeah, that's... Right?
He's a criminal.
Yeah.
Right? He's literally criminalized in the movie until he has some utility in society.
Yeah.
He's a good player, right? He's a
goon.
And how is it that they become a good player? The rich white guy descends from his tower.
Leo Lennon's coming back in.
The rich the rich white guy comes down from his tower and he helps the poor proletariat into a cohesive team. He gives them all rules.
I'm more upset by the fact that the rich kid's name was Banks and the guy's name is Duckworth.
Right?
Duckworth and Banks.
That's like, remember Burger King, the Cool Kids Club?
Yeah.
The black kid in the wheelchair, his name was Wheels with a Z.
It's fucked up. It's
fucked up. It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
It is a bit on the nose.
Yeah.
I feel like once they're all they're functioning members of society, right? Yeah. They're good factory workers. Then all of a sudden everyone's a Mighty Duck fan. No one wanted to. No one would have worn their jersey if they were the kids that we saw at the beginning of the video.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. Would you put that jersey on?
No.
Hell no. You wouldn't.
Yeah.
I would because I believe in the people.
No, you wouldn't.
What was that, in the '90s?
Yeah. When have you ever worn a jersey?
You would have bought a cardigan.
I refuse to wear jerseys.
Yeah. You would have worn a Mighty Ducks cardigan.
It's a uniform.
So we're actually going to change the name from Currently Nerdy to Currently Hammer and Sickle. Yeah.
And there's two communists on the show.
I'm just pointing out the very overt Marxist tones in most of these videos. I'm just pointing that out, right? God. It's just very clear to me. I don't know how you guys don't see it, but I clearly see.
Where's Senator McCarthy?
I absolutely see it. I can't in good conscience talk about it in Vietnamese. We have a history in this country.
I see this and I'm going, this bothers me. The rich white guy. I'm pretty sure he literally was in a tower. Wasn't he like a stockbroker or something?
No, he was a lawyer.
He's a lawyer, that's what it was.
He never lost any of his cases.
Right.
And then he got a DUI.
That's right. He had to do this community service type shit. Yeah.
He had a pretty bad
See, team. This is fucked up shit.
Those 90s movies, too, you look at like Little Giants, Mighty Ducks.
They're all like that.
They always have the outcast kid who's kind of the main character, right? Yeah. It's like the odd one who's not they're good, but they're not part of the team for some reason.
Yeah.
And then you have like the nerdy kid who has all the allergies. Yeah. Right. And you have like the big burly kid who's rough around the edges.
Yeah.
You have the fat kid. Right?
Goldberg.
Like it's the goofy, goofy fat kid. And then you have
Goldberg became the goalie, right?
Yeah, he was a goalie.
You also have the what is it? Usually it's like the good guy who's rich and white, right? You see that in Little Giants and shit, right?
Uh-huh.
And you see that in every single one of these 90s movies. And it actually reminded me of another old story that I used to watch as a kid. I was obsessed with this. It's called The Three Monks or The Three Buddhist Priests. It's like based in the 1980s in China about three monks.
Uh-huh.
Now one monk is carrying water up to the temple, right?
Okay.
He's got to go up a giant mountain.
All right.
Right. Another monk kind of comes by, right? And then they go, "We're going to try to share the load here." But the stick that he uses to carry the pails of water isn't big enough to have both of them. So they both basically they put one pail of water in the middle, and then they both carry it with the ones each of them side holding a stick, right?
Okay.
Fat monk shows up, right? And they're going, okay. Because the water keeps kind of going back and forth because their sizes are so different. So the water pail keeps going back and forth on the side of the stick.
Uh-huh.
Fat monk shows up and they're like, well, we'll get him to do it, right? Because he's big enough and we can do that. But the fat one drinks all the water. They get really pissed at him, right? So they make him carry the water. They make him carry two pails of water up to the top of the monastery, right? Turns out, though, on his way there, he drinks both pails of water. So now they're all pissed, right? So they just decide not to get any water anymore. A rat decides to walk through and knock over a candle and lights the monastery on fire, right? And they all have to figure out a way to bring this water up to the temple in order to basically douse the fire. The idea being that it's like if you put off your work to somebody else, the work will never get done. That's kind of the general moral of the story. It kind of came after Mao's like spring forward cultural revolution type thing, right? Like it came after the end of that whole thing. So it was kind of the beginning of that. And then eventually the monks build like this like pulley system. So like none of them have to work. It's interesting. The one issue I always had with it though is like this poor fat monk. It's like they just assume that he's fat, that he can't control himself. Right? There's a certain level of like, yeah, you know, you're the fat guy, so you have no self control. So you're gonna drink all the water like an asshole and decide to screw all the monks that are living up in this monastery. It's kind of a fucked up thing when you think about it.
Fat shaming.
I actually want to go back to movies from our childhood, or because you talked about Mighty Ducks, and that really reminded me of 16 Candles, right? Mm. Which is actually a little bit before our time. Yeah, it was 1984. And we're 1986, you and I.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're 1989.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so like it's a little bit before our time, but like we grew up with 16 Candles. Like it was part of our childhood education. Like maybe we didn't watch it when it came out in the movie theater. We did. We watched 16 Candles.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like our quintessential coming of age.
Yeah, like Breakfast Club, 16 Candles.
I remember Long Duck Dong.
Yeah, yeah. But like if you think back on those movies, they haven't aged well.
No.
Right? There's certain things that they did that we go, like if that movie had existed now, we'd be like, this is fucked up or this isn't right. Someone would call it out, right? There'd be a hashtag like boycotting it or something.
You're going to ruin 16 Candles. But 16,
one of the things is like the movies from the 80s and 90s in particular, like if they did it now, we'd call it out. But we seem to give them a pass. We still look at 16 Candles and go, oh, that's a feel-good movie about coming of age and really coming into your own. There's this character in 16 Candles called Ted, right? He's the nerd.
Michael, what is his
Michael
name?
Michael something Scott. Bell. Something.
No, the guy from fucking the CSI or something.
Yeah, the guy from Dead Zone.
Yeah, John C. Reilly. No.
Not John C. Reilly. is the
Anthony Michael Hall.
Anthony Michael Hall. Yeah. That's
he's got
name.
Three names.
He just got arrested again or something. Yeah, it was like he was causing a scene on a...
Whatever. Yeah. Anthony Michael Hall, who, you know, quintessentially played a nerd in a lot of those.
Weird Science.
Yeah. Weird Science. He Breakfast was also Club. In Black Breakfast Club and in 16 Candles.
Oh, he did a black voice in that.
In 16 Candles.
He's all the John Hughes movies.
Yeah, he's in the John Hughes movies. In 16 Candles, he plays a nerd, right, called Ted. And he's like a quintessential, they call him the geek. This is also one of the first depictions of the geek as a person rather than as a caricature. Because the geek up until this point was the term, was pocket protector, glasses, suspenders. This is the first time they showed a geek as an actual person, like in high school. Okay. So the geek is really, Ted wants to get with this girl named Caroline. Mm-hmm. Caroline is the girlfriend or the girl of the popular boy in the film, right? And there's a scene where she gets drunk at his party and her boyfriend basically gives her to Ted and gives Ted his dad's car, the popular boy's car, and goes... He says, have fun with her. He then goes to drive her home. And along the way, he takes Polaroids of her while she's like asleep, Polaroids of down her shirt. They end up having sex. She's so drunk, she can't, she's unconscious.
Yeah.
He has sex with her. The next morning, they wake up in the car together. And she goes, did we have sex? I didn't even know it was you. And she ends up falling in love with him. And then... you know, they end up together at the end of the movie. The moral of that kind of subplot is that you give nerds a chance, they'll be good in bed, right? Because she was so surprised that he was decent in bed. Give them a shot and that the nerd ends up with a girl. It's the first time that, like, the nerd ends up with a girl.
That's rape,
but if you actually think about it, it's rape. It's date rape. Oh, the movie is about date rape. Well, not the entire movie, but that subplot is about date rape. He has sex with an unconscious woman.
That shit ain't cool, bro.
It isn't cool. If you go back, I mean, obviously, like, consent is difficult. Our understanding of consent has come a long way, right? It's like today we point stuff like that out as rape or whatnot. But that was trivialized in the 80s. It was made as a humorous subplot. And then you could say, okay, well, it's something that happened in the 80s. But we still look at 16 Candles as a feel-good movie.
Yeah. But that plays into, like, rape culture today, though, because it was so normalized to do that shit then, and, like, boys will be boys, you know, like, that's why you don't get drunk.
The good boy nerd raped her, technically.
Right? Like, that just doesn't, I don't know.
And then not only raped her, but she woke up and went, wow, I want more of that.
Yeah, right? That just doesn't make any
sense. Isn't that twisted?
Yeah.
It's a really twisted. I mean, this, you could argue that it really ties into rape culture. Last Tango in Paris also is another example of that. Mm-hmm. Last Tango in Paris has a sexual assault scene. We found out more recently that they actually didn't tell the actress what they were going to do. Marlon Brando and the director sprung it on her so her reactions would be real.
Oh God.
Yeah. So, and she, towards the later of her life, she felt like I got raped in that movie. She died, so she had no... Like, this was a big controversy because he revealed it recently in an interview. He's like, yeah, we didn't tell her.
Yeah.
We just sprung it on her because we wanted to make her reactions real. Yeah. So, yeah, you could argue that this is a part of a cultural thing, but... It just points out that there's, like, even in movies that have, like, good morals and meant to be feel good or stories, that there is, like, certain assumptions in those stories.
Yeah. So, kind of going on that, right? Yeah. Movie I used to love as a kid, like, now that I'm thinking about it, kind of fucked up.
We're fucking up everyone's childhood today. Yeah.
So, y'all ever seen that movie Rookie of the Year with the kid from America?
Yeah, the baseball movie.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, plot of the movie, right? Kid breaks his arm.
Yeah.
It's in a weird position. So the whole time, like, he's got it in, like, this upward position. Like, so, like, he gets this, like, weird reflex where his arm goes, like, really, really fast, right? So he's able to throw, like, a fastball, like, 120 miles per hour, which is insane, right? So they find him because he's at a baseball game. Someone hits a home run from the other team. They're like, throw it back, throw it back. He throws it back, and somehow it gets to home plate before the guy running the home run gets there. Yeah. They're like, we got to find this kid and make him a pitcher. So he becomes a pitcher for this team. He becomes a pitcher for the Chicago Cubs, who just won the World Series, mind you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you know 2016 is fucking weird.
Yeah.
Cubs have never won it. Billy Goat curses.
Also, would usually in political science, if the Cubs were to win, the idea is that then Clinton would have won, technically.
No. Yeah.
There's a linking. It's the home team.
Are they a home team?
They were, or whatever it was.
They weren't the home team. The Indians were the home team.
No. Her home team.
She's from Chicago?
Yeah, she's a Chicago person.
Oh, fair enough. Anyways, so when I was a kid, I thought it was cool. Because this kid, you know, like he got this like weird reflex in his arm and he could throw this pitch really fast. And then he became like a professional baseball player. But the kid was in like middle school or high school.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, right. He's a child pretty much. They exploited the fuck out of this kid to play. Baseball seasons are grueling, Ali.
They have to be.
They're 120 something games.
Yeah.
So imagine that. You have a child who's spending like from spring training, which is like March till like October. That's when the baseball season ends, playing on this team, and they're exploiting the shit out of them. Because this is what they do to regular athletes, right? Like you go out there and you play if you're hurt, you play no matter what, right? Yeah. Like you have to go through some shit, but they're doing this like a 13, 14 year old kid.
Isn't that a Will Smith movie where it's like, he discovers there's something wrong with the concussion. Football players. Yeah. They keep making them play.
Right. It's because they don't stop. But baseball is like notorious with it. Baseball in the 90s, though, when this kid was playing, was the steroid era.
Oh.
So everyone was on roids, and he's in a locker room with a bunch of men who are probably taking these roids. Mm. So what kind of influence is that set up for this child?
Yeah.
Right.
With Chet Stedman.
Yeah.
That was Rocket, Chet Stedman.
Yeah, that was Tony Danza?
It was Gary Busey.
Gary Busey, yeah. Gary Busey was a...
I know more about this movie than
there you. There was an era...
He was in the outfield with Tony Danza.
Let's be real. Any era, the thought of Gary Busey is normal.
I know. No, he played the straight man. He played like the fatherly figure.
Yeah, like if you think it... If you remember that, like now we all collectively go, Gary Busey, ugh. Right? Yeah. We all collectively acknowledge the fact, dude's nuts.
Yeah.
But there was an era where we used to think he was normal. The 80s and 90s. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Right? It just goes to show you how fucked up those years are. But you know that story of the what would you call it? All State commercials? What was the name of this movie?
Angels in the Outfield.
Not Angels in the Outfield.
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the year. That's what it was.
All State commercials.
Yeah, it's like I heard All State.
What are you talking about?
I don't know what I was talking about. But to me, that's an interesting story.
More capitalism?
Because it's linked to capitalism yet again in my mind.
And there were,
because the worker isn't allowed to ever be injured. When a worker is injured, they're no longer part of a functioning factory.
In the end of the movie, he gets hurt.
Right.
And he's off the team.
And the only injuries, we think of injuries as disabling, right? There's a word, we use the word what? Disable.
Yeah. Or disability.
Right? Yeah. Handicap. Disability. Because they're no longer functioning members of the factory. The bourgeois aren't able to exploit them. But in this instance, his disability becomes a valuable, exploitable consumer.
Like Rudolph.
Like Rudolph. His disability, his deviance, becomes a consumable good. A consumable good for the bourgeois.
We've gotten full circle.
Literally child labor. He's a middle school kid. Which, by the way, Betsy DeVos, our new education secretary, as appointed by Donald Trump, actually wrote a fantastic article on why she believes we should bring back child labor because children build character in coal mines. That's a fun aside. But seriously, this is all about capitalism.
So here's the question I have.
About capitalism or about the movie?
Just, no, in general. What happens if Omar gets disabled?
Yeah, I know. Omar's exotic birds.
Who's it take? Ali's exotic birds?
Well, see, the Omar, no.
Is Omar a bourgeoisie or a proletariat?
Omar represents an old system of the economy.
Yeah.
He's the barter trader.
Yeah, exactly.
He came with the caravan.
Seriously.
Before capitalism rise. Yeah. He deals in trade.
He
right?
deals in
it's mercantilism. it's an old system. He was an explorer. He came with Ponce de Leon.
Yeah, he's a pioneer, is what he is.
It's an old system.
Seriously.
No longer around. See, this is why poor Omar is a vestige of a bygone era. Around him are super malls and There's and a, big and edifices of capitalism.
That's right. And then
the Laguna Hills Mall.
Has gone to shit. And the gem in the middle is Omar's exotic birds.
Poor Omar's the last remnant of a bygone era, a romantic era.
Yeah.
It's weird how we remember our past, right? There's this romanticization. We talk about mercantilism, Omar's golden age, right? But there is. We think of our childhood in like golden terms. But when you actually look back at these stories that we grew up with, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, even if you're not into the whole capitalist spin, there's some of the morals of the story. They're meant to be feel good. They're meant to be like, you're supposed to watch The Mighty Ducks and go, that was a great movie.
Yeah.
Right, you're supposed to go, I love this movie.
Well, I can't anymore, thanks
but
to you.
But now, if you really go back and look at them, there's like a set of assumptions. It's not the morals, right?
Yeah.
It's the assumptions that are part, like the social assumptions that are part of the story that you go, that's really fucked up. Yeah. Let poor kids be poor kids. Like, why do they have to become, you know?
I guess it's the reflection of the way society was at the time. I mean, it's a snapshot into what our moral
is. Oh, if you're an inner city kid, you're only cool if you could be of some utility to the rich white people who are buying your tickets.
That's true. That's true. But rich white people have done a lot for society.
Hey, the kid from Rookie of the Year was like broke too before he got in there.
See, always broke, right? Yeah. See, Angels in the Outfield. Wasn't he like an orphan or some shit?
He was an orphan.
Right?
Yeah.
No one gave a shit about him until he started flapping his wings, right?
Yeah, you give him signs. You see the angels.
All of a sudden, now he's like, everyone's paying attention. But the poor kid's an orphan.
Yeah.
He lived with a black kid.
Yeah.
He might as well have been black.
He got adopted by a black man.
Yeah. Like, society really wasn't
In the 90s. That means he couldn't move to Laguna Niguel.
Yeah, he would have been screwed.
That was his chances ruined.
Yeah, they wouldn't have been able to buy a house out
wouldn't
here.
Wouldn't have been a house in Laguna Niguel. Zoning laws.
And they were in Anaheim, so.
They were in Anaheim. They were screwed.
Yeah, they had to live in Anaheim.
Our childhood was fucked up. We ruined people's childhood.
Yeah. You know, rich white people were responsible for the name Sandwich.
Why are they?
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Connected with the aristocrat, the bourgeois, Ali's worst enemy. John Montague, the fourth Earl of Sandwich in the mid-18th century.
Why are you yelling?
I'm sorry.
The Earl of Sandwich?
Because it was my fanfare. Wait, trumpets.
I've heard that name before. Montague. Fucking Romeo's dad.
Anyway.
No connection?
So, the Wall Street Journal actually named Britain's biggest contribution to gastronomy is the sandwich. Technically, the name sandwich is only what comes out because we actually have history of sandwiches being back during the age of Herod, King Herod and the Jewish.
Herod.
Herod.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Vietadis moment.
Yeah. Sorry, Pornhub just flashed on my laptop and then I went into Diz mode.
Was it midget porn?
Yes.
Yes.
So it's said that this man, John Montague, would order his valet to go and bring him a piece of roast beef. His valet, whatever it is.
Bring
him
in. Was it a valet?
We say valet. Valet is a very different thing than a valet.
That's the woman that takes you to the ring.
And a valet is a person who parks your car.
No, a valet is the woman that accompanies the wrestler to the ring.
And a valet is a personal attendee.
So he told the dude that's helping him out,
okay,
right, to bring him a piece of roasted beef in between two pieces of toasted bread during his intense card games because he didn't want to leave the table.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the time that he was playing things like cribbage and shit, right?
Quidditch?
Yeah, cribbage.
Cribbage.
So what he would do is it was good because it wouldn't get any grease on his fingers so he can play cards easier.
Mm.
Right? So that's – and then as the people in this bourgeois club began to kind of take
what
on
time
this
is
thing.
This
is the 18th century.
Okay.
So 1770-ish.
Okay.
Right? This is the first time we actually – 1773 is when we first see it in cookbooks in England. And then the 1860s is when we see it in American cookbooks.
So when does this guy live?
So this guy lived during the 1770s. Okay. At this point, people began to also order. They kind of took the hint and they go, give me the thing that they gave sandwich. And eventually it turned into the term sandwich. They just started calling it a sandwich. Now, Boston, Massachusetts, the court already decided that it by law, a sandwich is defined by something in between two pieces of bread. So you can't have a quesadilla or a burrito be a sandwich or like a pita bread.
Why not?
Apparently it has to be between two pieces of bread. According to Boston,
the tortilla
Massachusetts
is bread.
Law, tortilla is one piece of bread folded over for a quesadilla.
Ah,
so
tortilla is like this.
Yeah. So now that we've seen the sandwich, this is interesting. His great-great-great-great-grandson, Orlando Montague, actually started the restaurant chain, the Earl of Sandwich. And they have a sandwich called the Original 1762, which is based on his great-great-great-grandfather's original sandwich, which is a toasted piece of bread with hot roast beef, but they've added sharp cheddar as well as a creamy horseradish sauce. That's a UK Brit thing, but originally it was just a piece of bread and two pieces of bread.
The Brits have always loved sandwiches. I mean, sandwich is a tea thing, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. But there's sandwiches like those with weird tea sandwiches with like cucumbers and cream.
Cucumbers and cream, yeah.
Y'all got me hungry now.
You ever heard tea time? You have cakes and
high tea,
biscuits.
I don't drink tea, bro. I'm not.
And sandwiches that says little triangles, little scones.
I've seen those.
Maybe.
I've seen it, but I'm not one of those elitists like you. I'm not part of 1% like you are.
I don't know what you're talking about. We've had an interesting podcast. I think we're gonna name this podcast
Omar's Exotic Birds.
Omar's Exotic Birds. We're gonna name this podcast Omar and Ruining Your Childhood.
Yeah, Omar and Communism.
Omar, Communism, and Ruining Your Childhood. That is the name of this podcast. Diz, why don't you take us out?
Yes, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlyready. Go on there, follow us, like our page, write in our wall, send us some cool stuff. You catch us on Twitter, at currentlynerdy on the tweets. We're also on Instagram, go on there, currently nerdy on Instagram. Make sure you comment and like our pages. Our hashtag of the week for our Twitter is #FUChildhood. And then our secondary hashtag is #Omar's Exotic Birds. So you can write both. They give it here and fucking pay me for this shit.
What if it trends on Twitter?
I know.
He's going to be so excited.
Hey, Omar's Exotic Birds is trending.
What happened?
We're on Tumblr. currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. Go on there, ship us, do whatever the Tumblr is. Oh, good. YouTube, new Harry Potter versus Cursed Child versus Fantastic Beast video will be coming up
soon. Is up.
So make sure. Yeah, I don't know when this podcast is coming out. So hopefully it's up.
Yeah, it's up.
So go out there, like it, give us the thumbs and the bums, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll give out giveaways soon because we're close to 200 subscribers. And then iTunes. Currently Nerdy on iTunes. Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. 5-star ratings, please. If your friends don't like iTunes, have them listen to us on currentlynerdy.com. Great way to stream the podcast. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
Of course, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can still find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on Twitter at AAOLOMI, or you can catch me on my website at alialomi.com. Diz, how about you?
D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H. Spells Dizbulla.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you. And we'll love you even more if you shop at Omar's Exotic Birds.